Track 5. Carolyn Wood learns from Nigel Mortar how, on renovating the control tower at RAF North Creek, he uncovers the vital and top-secret role it played in the preparations for the D-Day landings, a mission designed to distract German radar surveillance systems.
Now, we're talking in the aftermath of the 80th anniversary, and it had a very, very specific task to achieve here, didn't it?
It did. It was actually, its first operation was D-Day, in support of D-Day. So this station opened on May the 1st, 1944, and they went into training in what they were going to do. Although they didn't actually have the equipment then, they had special equipment that's held back. The equipment was still being fitted to the aircraft on the morning of the 5th of June 1944.
Goodness me.
And the special operations had been trained, they were trained here, and what they were doing is they were jamming German radar, one particular radar system called Freier, which is a German early warning radar system, which gave the Germans notice from radar stations along the coast of occupied Europe. It gave them notice of what was coming towards them. And of course, on D-Day, that was going to be a huge problem because they'd see a massive flotilla. So they wanted to persuade them that something else was going on and hide the truth. And the role here was to hide the truth. So they sent up what they called a mandrel screen. The equipment's called mandrel, and it produced an electronic screen of interference in front of the aircraft. They flew a special pattern, which they called the race course, which is like an oval orbit. But they flew this pattern in pairs, so there's two people in each pattern, and on the day, the first day they flew it, which was for the 5th of June 1944 in support of D-Day, they had 16 aircraft, so there's 8 of these patterns flying over 80 miles, so 80 mile width, so the screen was 80 miles wide.
Goodness me.
And so between airborne mandrel, which this was, and groundborne mandrel, which was in Kent, they were able, by jamming radar, to block what the Germans could see. It effectively blinded the Freier radar. They couldn't see anything. So they could see the wall of interference, but they couldn't see anything the other side of it, which meant they could hide everything that was approaching.
Did they have any other tricks up their sleeve to conceal?
Well, they had plenty of tricks that day. They were running spoofs towards Pas-de-Calais because they were trying to convince the Germans that the invasion was actually going to be in Calais, not in Normandy. They were trying to do everything to divert them from Normandy. So over the previous months, they'd been giving them loads of misinformation through either friendly, double agents, or very often through not-so-friendly embassies. So that just giving them little snippets of information through, you know, routes that they had, which were quite, you know, spurious. And then that giving them information which led them to believe that the invasion was going to be at Pas-de-Calais. Pas-de-Calais was an obvious place to invade, of course. It seemed easier than anywhere else. And then on the morning, what they did is they ran a spoof, which was called Taxable and Glimmer, and there were two faint false invasion forces, I suppose you'd call them. They used something called Window, which was aluminium tinfoil, which they dropped from aircraft, which were flying in a square pattern, moving towards Pas-de-Calais. And that gave them impressions on their radar screens of a massive airborne invasion. And on the sea itself, their navy were taking small boats, towing other boats behind them, which had receptors in them, which were emitting a pulse, which made them look like 10,000-ton ships. So there's a huge spoof going on, which will work fantastically as long as no one flew over it and saw what was really going on. And luckily, no one did. They just relied on their radar systems. And their radar systems in the run-up to D-Day had been bombed. So there's 92 stations along occupied Europe, and they'd been bombing them for the previous week. And on the 5th of June 1944, the radar stations that were working were down to 18, but 16 of those were deliberate, so they'd see the spoof. Two of them were meant to be out of action, but weren't completely. And so the problem with the mandrel screen, which they'll fly in to protect the Normandy landings, is that the German forces could see it on all the radar, because it was such a blunt tool. It was just putting up a massive screen of interference, so that they could see it on radar. So they knew something was going on. So to try and detract them from the main screen, what they did is another station, which was a sister station to this, called RAF Alton, which is near Blickling Hall in North Norfolk. They flew out from there and flew another screen to protect the spoof invasion force. Now, this sounds a little like madness, because why would you want to hide something that you want them to see? But, of course, it's fantastic psychology, because what they were doing is they were flying this, if you remember, this race course pattern, which is in an oval shape called the race course, with two aircraft in each, in the one protecting Normandy. Well, instead, for the one that was going to hide the spoof, they flew one aircraft in each pattern. So there was only four aircraft flying in this pattern in total, one in each of the race courses. And what happened was it put up an unreliable screen. So the German Freya radar could penetrate it every now and then. So it just looked like something was going wrong. It wasn't working as it should. But psychologically, the radar operators on the ground thought they were getting the chance to see something really important. And that meant they believed everything they saw, because they thought they weren't meant to see it. And the psychology of that worked beautifully. They were convinced that the invasion force was going towards...
Very clever.
It's extraordinary.
So their task was just this kind of distraction.
Yes.
So
yes.
That was the task.
That was the task for the one going towards Pas-de-Calais, but it's to detract from the main mandrel screen that was flying, that was protecting the Normandy one, so they wouldn't take any notice of it. They just think it was something associated with the Pas-de-Calais invasion. But because they couldn't work it out, it didn't matter so much, because they could see what was going on. Whereas this real one was actually hiding the invasion force.
Right.
And it's interesting, those two radar stations that were still working, one of them picked up the real invasion force. But because of the chaos that was going on everywhere else, they didn't believe it was important, and it was ignored. And they didn't actually see the invasion until they physically saw it from the beaches coming towards them.
So it was a highly successful...
It was highly... Yeah, I mean, the estimates shortly afterwards were that it was 95% effective, the screen. And given the flying pattern they had to fly, which was incredibly testing, it had to be incredibly accurate. The whole race course had to take exactly 10 minutes to fly. Couldn't be any variation at all. And it had to be exactly 10 minutes long. So the navigational and piloting skills had to be extraordinary.
So they went round and round.
They went round the race course, yep. And that had to take exactly 10 minutes to do that.
Wow.
But the length of that had to be exactly 10 miles. And the reason they did that was because the aircraft had to be in exactly the right position for the mantle screen to work. So they had to remain opposite each other to make sure no gap appeared.
Like a polarity.
Exactly. So... Because they couldn't speak to one another on their radios to make sure they were in the correct positions, they just had to rely on their partner doing the right thing. And the only way they could rely on that is by flying exactly the same pattern and being in the right position in exactly the right time. Hence the race course pattern. It's why they developed it here.
And this is the first time this had been used?
First time it had ever been used.
And I understand, I remember from your briefing, that you said that they didn't just... shoot off the runway and fly out towards the sea. There was a certain pattern they had to...
Yeah, well, the British, the RAF, which says very cosmopolitan RAF stations, that came from all over the world, the personnel here. But when they took off, before they left the area of the station, and the Americans used to form up into a flying pattern, they used to fly in a formation. The RAF didn't do that. What they used to do is they used to take off and they used to climb to get up to operational height before they moved away. So whilst takeoff would actually be remarkably short, so the aim was, I mean, on D-Day, when the 16 aircraft took off, their aim was to get them up at least one a minute. So incredibly fast. This tower would have been really, really busy. Frenetic activity getting all these aircraft off. But they wouldn't leave then, so you wouldn't have this kind of 16 minutes of intense activity and noise. They would climb up to operational height, which was nearly 18,000 feet, and that would take 20 minutes. So they would be droning on.
They'd be following each other in the spiral to 18,000 feet.
They're not following, because they all fly independently until they get out to where they need to be, and then they adopt the pattern. But they're all climbing, so they climb in like a spiral around the airfield, getting higher and higher, and then they pull off once they're at their height. Yeah, so there'd be this long droning sound of these four-engine bombers as they got up to operational height, which is the main thing they remember. Any people alive in Wells at the time, they always talk about the noise. Mm. It's the noise they remember because it went on so long.
Mm.
Yeah,
and they left in light, wasn't it light?
It was dusk. Yes, yeah. It was just settling dusk, but they were flying it in darkness. So once they were set up. So they left, the first aircraft left here at 20 to 10. They needed to be in position at 11:30. That's when the mantle screen was going to start.
Where were they heading for?
Well, they flew the mantle screen between Littlehampton and Portland, you know, just out to sea from the south coast. So they're flying over sea. So it's to protect that, you know, the Normandy coast. So the flotilla was planned to leave leave Britain at about midnight. And they started shelling Normandy at midnight. So they set their pattern. Well, they got into position from 11:30 and started their pattern. So everything was protected from that point.
And yeah. How long was the sortie? How long did it take?
Well, they flew on average 7 hours, which is really getting towards the maximum that one of the bombers, they flew Stirling four-engine bombers, which were the RAF's first four-engine bomber of the war. And was really considered kind of obsolete by this time, but it was ideal for this purpose. And their maximum duration in the air is really kind of seven and a half hours. So they were really stretching it when they were flying 7 hours. And indeed, some had to leave the pattern early because they were getting critically short of fuel. They were starting to get to the point where they wouldn't make it back unless they left. So they left, which is why eventually the pattern started to break, because the reserve aircraft that flew in to replace them couldn't stay there very long either, because they'd been up supporting them. And so, yeah, the maximum sun was out 7.5 hours, but that's really at the edges of the endurance of an aircraft for its fuel.